This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
James Bond there for you. Remember all that? They tried to get that music into every movie that they had at some point. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are not a spy show. We just enjoy listening to James Bond music. I'm Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, December the 8th. Wow. Getting closer. 17 more days. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Max Eden of the American Enterprise Institute about the case for school choice and how advocates of school choice need not patronize Democrats' policy demands to get what they want, because most people want it too. So we're going to talk with him about that. And the administration is telling us, of course, that Joe Biden gave Russian President Vladimir Putin a good talking to yesterday about leaving Ukraine alone. Now, here's my question. Have we heard or seen the actual words that Biden said to Putin? I'm very dubious. We're going to get some thoughts, however, on whether or not Biden gave Putin a good talking to, and a few other things, with the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceraci. So stay tuned for that a little bit later in the show. And will a constitutional convention fix what is wrong with our government? You know what? You know that we have the right under our laws to call a constitutional convention of the states, all 50, getting together on it. Well, some conservatives think that is the answer to solving our government issues, and we're going to take a look at it a little bit later. Also, we played the James Bond theme. In our ultimate top 10, we're going to give you the top 10 most profitable James Bond movies. The ones that made the most money based on the budget, okay? So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works, sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. We are getting closer to Christmas. If there is any period during the year that you got to look good, guys, with a nice haircut, it's Christmas. So get ready for that. Get to Andrew's Master Barbershop. It's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That is just off State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. They do the best haircutting for men in the Tampa Bay area, in my humble opinion. Call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. 733-3773. And always the tip of the hat to Good Morning Clearwater. Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Just love listening to them. Paul and Tracy Allen. And as we get closer to Christmas, they've got their Christmas toys for tots. And we want to push that as well. It's a wonderful thing to do. Good morning, Clearwater. All right. So Biden gets on a two-hour phone call. First of all, I'm surprised that Biden can stay awake for 2 hours. So I'm very impressed, unless he nodded off while he was talking to Vladimir Putin. But they did what they call a secure video call yesterday between Biden and Putin. Now, I don't know. I guess secure means that you're not going to get somebody getting on there and making odd noises because you know, like some kid that gets on a party line. I mean, I don't understand what they mean by a secure line. I guess it means that nobody else could listen in.
Yeah.
Well, I would want some private of the other people in my to listen in. I want to make sure I know what he's telling
them.
Well,
no outsiders. I mean, there's probably people in the room okay. that are keeping track of everything.
Okay, good.
All I saw was Putin laughing.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Do you think Biden was telling him old war stories? And when I say war stories, Biden never was involved in a war, but, you know, old stories about himself. Because if you've ever heard Biden talk about his early days, it's about the most boring thing I've ever heard.
Well, yeah. I mean, he just reads what's on the prompter, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you think he was reading a teleprompter as he was talking?
Oh, I'm sure. I think I saw Putin making hand puppets, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have to make hand puppets when Biden is talking. You know, it's a good thing.
Well, you think he broke out with the Let's Go Brandon?
How do you say that in Russian?
I don't know.
Huh? Vlogero Brandon. That's it. The White House, however, said Biden voiced deep concern. Here's the thing about Biden. How do you get intimidated by Joe Biden? He's the least intimidating person right. I've ever seen. Anyway, apparently Biden voiced deep concern that the U.S. and its European allies are very concerned about Russia's military buildup along the Ukrainian border. The president also reportedly made it clear that the U.S. and the allies would respond with strong economic and other measures in the event of military escalation. Well, you know, grabbing his wallet is one way of scaring him to stop doing bad things. The other thing is the possibility that, you know, they had that pipeline between Germany and Russia,
mm-hmm.
and they have a deal, Germany and Russia. Somehow we have influenced that, and Biden gave it the green light originally, while, of course, shutting down our pipelines, as you know, when he took office. Somehow it was okay for Russia to transmit oil through a pipeline, but not for the United States to have pipelines transmitting oil.
You think maybe Biden broke out the whisper?
Yeah.
Stay out of Russia. Stay out of Ukraine.
Keep out of Ukraine. Now, that in itself is scary. Maybe that's why he would do it. Do you think he could intimidate Putin that way?
Putin would just laugh at him. Come on.
I think he would. Okay. You know, the other thing is, Biden doesn't speak Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin may speak some English. I don't know how much he really knows, but I know that Biden doesn't know Russian. So they had to have somebody else in there that does know what they were talking about.
You know,
the interpreter.
If you compare when Trump met Putin, they looked like they had a good time, and it was very relaxed.
And they met. So far, Biden's just sitting behind a desk.
Yeah,
right?
Well, they're blaming this on COVID. It's just COVID's getting to be very convenient.
It has nothing to do. Biden doesn't want to go anywhere.
It's very convenient.
Yeah. So anyway, we shouldn't just completely put down this call because maybe Biden did make the point. And I do think we've got some, you know, we're not going to go to war if they take over the Ukraine. Let's be honest. If it was a NATO country, we would suppose, and it is not. The Ukraine is not a NATO country. The agreement between NATO countries, which the United States is a part of, is that if one is attacked, it's considered an attack on all of the other countries as well, which means that we would respond. We would respond to an attack to a NATO country. Ukraine would like to be a NATO country, but we have not accepted them, and they're in that very vulnerable spot there, you know. Remember that the Crimean Peninsula, which was part of the Ukraine while Obama was president, was taken over by the Russians. They basically just walked in and took it.
Well, you know, Obama really scared the crap out of them, sure.
Yes. That's another one. He was busy going around the world apologizing.
I remember him
the apology tour?
I remember him shaking his finger.
Oh, that scared
me. Remember, I still remember that when he was talking about Putin, he was shaking his finger.
It scares me right now to think about it.
I couldn't sleep for three days.
No, exactly. Well, we're going to take our break, and we're going to change topics. Max Eden of the American Enterprise Institute, gracious enough to come on. We're going to talk a little bit about something on their website, the case for school choice.
Nothing you can take and tear me away from my God. Nothing you could do, 'cause I'm stuck like glue to my God.
is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back here on Freedom Works. Delighted to have Max Eden join us. He is a research fellow specializing on education at the American Enterprise Institute. And AEI has a story that you can go and see on their website right now. The value-based case for school choice is also the winning case. Max, welcome to Freedom Works.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I think this is a very compelling and interesting article that is on your website. And it talks about how proponents of school choice don't really have to patronize Democrats to get what they want. I think it's a very good point. But would you expand on this concept, this philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I think it's important for people to kind of realize what happened this last year versus what's happened before in school choice. We're 30 years into this movement for school choice, a movement to have money follow students and not just go straight to district or government schools. And after those 30 years, only a little over a million students are actually being served by these programs. Well, this year, new programs across the country, seven new programs, 14 expanded ones, are now able to serve an additional 4.3 million students. It was possibly the greatest year in educational choice since the beginning. And so why did this happen? Partly it happened because of the school closures and the unions overplaying their hand, and we had some other authors discuss that, but partly because for the first time, people who were pushing school choice changed their strategy. It had always been viewed by the philanthropists who kind of funded the advocacy organizations as a bipartisan project that should only really benefit at-risk urban students, and it passed primarily on that basis. And that's part of why it's so limited in its scope and in its appeal. In this year, we saw that for the first time, the case for choice being made for values, not choice for those kids who are at risk because of circumstances, but choice for your kid because you have a right to send your kid to a school that doesn't actively try to subvert your family's values. And that's a case that I think up until perhaps this year, no Republican politician was willing to make because they viewed school choice as just kind of an exercise in altruism that they would do for the other side, for, you know, Democratic constituency kids, not something that really delivered to their constituents. But with the rising kind of like revelation and awareness of the size and scope of critical race theory and gender ideology in public education, this case kind of makes the point that that's a sound basis for argument. It's a basis that will appeal to Republicans, and if it alienates Democrats, which it certainly will, the paper suggests quite accurately that that doesn't matter. They looked at all school choice programs that have passed. They analyzed 70 votes, and the Democrats were only needed to get school choice across the finish line three times. Every other time, Republicans had been sufficient, but in exchange for this bipartisan appearance, we've sacrificed the scope, the scale, the size, the efficiency of these programs, and we've prevented millions of parents from being able to tap into them, and hence, you know, allowed the public school system to give rise to ever greater ideological capture because parents didn't really have the power to do anything about it by taking their kids out and sending them somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, I have so many things to say about school choice. I'm such a big proponent of the idea of school choice, and I've always worried about when the federal government gets involved in any industry, including education, how it makes it worse. And we can go right down a laundry list. Anything that the federal government gets involved in the long run, makes it worse, whether it's healthcare or education or any kind of thing that industry is doing. I think, you know, with schools, we got along long enough with the public schools situation over the years where they were still teaching pretty well, you know. They were getting good people in to teach. But we've gotten to a point now where I honestly don't think that there are, especially in the inner city, any public schools that are doing any kind of a decent education. I think it's critical that we get into the concept of allowing these kids to get a choice, and a choice being in the private sector. I wanted to get your thought on all of that.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, you look over the history of various debates, and you'll find kind of conservatives making these slippery slope arguments that, oh, well, what if, you know, if we let the federal government do this, then eventually that will happen, and those are always poo-pooed. But frankly, what the federal government is doing in public education right now is beyond the wildest concerns and fears that folks had when they were starting to step in. I mean, you had the federal government build this entire administrative apparatus that has now been kind of hijacked and is being utilized as an ideological pushing apparatus. And you have basically what is coming to resemble the establishment of a new woke religion in public education. And there are limited things that you can do if you're a parent to fight back against that within the system, because there are so many hooks and crannies and nooks and places that pressure can be applied from governments, activist groups, foundations. Really, the ability to take your child out is, I think, the only thing that can save the public system itself, and also for parents, it might be the only thing that can save their child's moral fiber, because in many ways schools are trying to turn children against parents as part of a broader cultural project that has the basic endorsement and backing of the federal government.
Yeah, it's almost, it's just, I don't know what the word is. It's criminal, I think. But we're talking with Max Eden. He is a research fellow on education at the American Enterprise Institute. And we're talking about a piece that is currently on their website, The Value-Based Case for School Choice is also the winning case. So now, I mean, here's the thing. It seems like every generation, education is doing a worse job of really educating. I mean, if you go back and look at a test that, and you know this, that kids at the turn of the 19th to 20th century were taking in eighth grade, if you updated the test and administered it today, not only would the eighth graders today not do as well, I don't think the high schoolers would do as well. They were really educating kids to think, I think, back then, more so than they are educating kids to think today. I want to get your thought on that.
No, I mean, in some ways, they're trying to make education worse, right? They're pushing. The federal government has recommended to all districts as part of its COVID relief fund that they consider adopting equitable math.
Yeah,
equitable math,
exactly.
A framework that views math as a manifestation of white supremacy, asks students to interrogate who gets to really say what is right and what are the power dynamics and power structures inherent in mathematics classrooms. It's anti-educational. You know, I mean, you'll find these foundations funding people who will say that teaching students to read and speak American Standard English is white supremacy. So I think, you know, the history of education reform for many decades is the history of stupid ideas that become fads, that do nothing, that crash and burn and make everything a little bit worse. But what we're seeing right now is fundamentally different in kind. It's a coordinated effort to change school culture in a way that, you know, it's not under the surface. It's quite on the surface in a way that is hostile to traditional academic achievement,
right,
much less, you know, traditional values.
Now, we've always had the union situation. We say we, you know, education has always had the union situation in the public schools, which sometimes can be an impediment to actually teaching the kids, I think, a little bit better. But in particular with this virus, I think you mentioned that there's been more of a movement towards the private schools. Because why? Is it because the public schools with the unions have been reluctant to open up as quickly as maybe the private schools would do? Or what do you think?
Well, yeah, worse than reluctant, right? I mean, you saw the National Teachers Union coordinating with the CDC to change reopening guidance to make reopening more difficult. You saw particular union affiliates saying things like in Los Angeles, you know, we won't reopen our schools until the federal government passes Medicare for all, Medicaid for all, you know, open borders, et cetera. Parents are realizing, I think more than ever before, and the unions have always been a massive problem, I think more massive than appreciated broadly, frankly. But parents, the part of the reason it's not appreciated is that parents don't really want to think that, like, hey, maybe my teachers don't have my kids' best interests in heart. And their teachers probably don't, but the organization to whom their teachers belong and that kind of has a huge role in governing schools has just showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that it puts its own ideological interests in front of kids. Contrasted with private schools who, you know, they can't keep educating kids if they can't keep the kids, and they can't keep the kids with their clothes, so they have fought just as hard by hook and crook to stay open and serve in many cases. And the contrast for a lot of parents couldn't possibly be clearer.
You know, it's been good to see these parents getting involved with these school districts. And, of course, we had the case in Virginia, and we've had them in other places as well, where things had gotten so ridiculous, that the parents finally had enough. And, you know, once you get going that way, it's tense, I think, to turn the pendulum and make it swing the other way. So now I get the impression that parents across the country are becoming more vigilant about what is being taught to their kids in school. Maybe they're going to show up more now at either PTA or school district functions. What your thought on that?
No, I've seen that as well, and I think so as well. But the unfortunate thing is that the deck is stacked against them in some important ways. You know, a lot of states hold school board elections off cycle, so people don't even know that they're happening. They don't go out and vote. The democratic process doesn't really control local public schools in about half of all states. And, you know, what's the most of these parents can do? I mean, you've seen these kind of public porn readings where they read just horrifically explicit material that's in their elementary school libraries. You see them trying to expose things, but fundamentally, if they can't vote the school board out, elect their own, or, you know, be given the resources to take their kids out, they're just facing such a profound headwind. And I wish them all the luck in the world. A lot of my work is trying to, you know, help to inform them. I'm working on a book to that end at the moment. It'll be up. Won't be out for a while, but they're facing such huge headwinds, and policymakers really need to understand that school choice is a huge way to empower parents who have these concerns. It's not just a way to help kids in the inner city escape failing schools. It's also a way to empower suburban soccer moms who don't want their kindergartner to be shown the gender unicorn or to come home saying that they want to rip off their white skin because they feel so guilty.
Yeah. So overall, as you look in your crystal ball, it seems like we're moving towards more school choice for everybody. Are you optimistic about where we're going with our educational system?
Yes and no. I'm modestly optimistic that a handful of states will substantially expand their school choice offering and will therefore become fantastic places to live. I mean, Florida has done excellent work and is expanding on that. New Hampshire and West Virginia and Arizona all have really robust choice systems. So I'm optimistic that some of these red states will really get it. The legislators will push, and they will create a system that is free and that helps kids be aligned with their parents' values rather than subvert them. But in a lot of other states, I have a lot less hope because the forces that are pushing all the stuff, the anti-achievement, anti-Western civilization, frankly, forces pushing into schools is so strong, especially in blue states, that I have very little hope for them.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, Max, thank you so very much for coming on, and we'd love to have you back, especially maybe when your book is about ready to come out. But enjoy it very much. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great speaking with you. Have a great day.
All right, Max. Max Eden, American Enterprise Institute. Okay. We're going to take our break. When we come back, the administration is telling us that Biden gave Russian President Vladimir Putin a real good talking to about leaving Ukraine alone. Well, is that for sure? We'll find out. We'll talk with the proprietor of the barber pole about it, His Excellency Andrew Ceresi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tantalk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the next segment of Freedom Works, and thank you so very much for being with us. Well, remember when Biden decided to have a commission to study whether or not to enlarge the Supreme Court? They're going to do a commission, right? Well, the commission has finished its work. The commission has come out. Have you heard about this, Ed? Have you heard about the commission?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Well, the Presidential Commission on the Supreme Court has voted unanimously in favor of approving their final report. That's about the only thing they voted unanimously on. They all disagreed. You know, you've been hearing about, we've got to add Supreme Court justices,
yeah.
Right? You know, this is not fair.
Well, they call pack the court, right?
It's called packing the court. It's coming from the people that are upset that we have a conservative majority.
Right.
You didn't hear them talk about it very much when there was a liberal majority.
Right.
In fact, you didn't hear about it at all. Well, the vote concluded of the 34-member commission. By the way, they held 6 public meetings. They stopped short of offering specific recommendations. So they all get together. What do? Do they go and jet set to some nice hotel and, you know, sit around and drink margaritas and talk about it? Or how? I mean, in other words, is this just a big waste of money? They came up
with no
conclusion. They went in and came out with the same conclusion, which was each of them had their own opinion on it, and they didn't come up to an agreement. Instead, they offered a summary of arguments for and against packing the court. So there you go. All right. Patiently waiting is the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceresi, with us. And Andrew, first of all, Joe Biden, I understand from what I'm reading that the administration is saying Joe Biden really socked it to Vladimir Putin.
We have a clip of that. Did you want to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear it first.
Okay. Have you ever had a dream that you wanted him to do you so much you could do anything?
Yeah, that was Joe Biden. I think that was the first question to Putin. Andrew, what do you think?
Well, Paul, the first thing, I think the Democrats need to pack something else, not the Supreme Court.
Okay.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you know, Biden, he had a good talk with Putin yesterday, and he's all concerned. He's going to protect those Ukrainian borders, you know, because the borders are very important, he said.
There you go. Borders are important.
What's wrong with our border?
Well, he doesn't have time for our border.
This guy's a total moron.
You got to remember that he has time for their border. He also has time. He also has time to approve the Russian to Germany oil pipeline.
Of course, but not ours.
Not ours.
Neither, Paul. What's going on here?
That's what I'm asking you. I don't have any idea anymore.
The American people all should be thinking like me, if they were smart. Okay?
Yeah.
We had enough of this guy. We had enough of the Democrat Party. We need to ship them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to go.
This
guy has made sense with absolutely nothing. Okay? Again, the chicken wing thing is killing me. It's killing me. I can't afford to eat chicken wings anymore.
Somehow you've got a big to-do about these chicken wings. Here we are talking about Ukraine, and you're talking about chicken wings.
Well, this all goes back to the Ukraine.
Oh, I see. Is that where we get our chicken wings from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they got to be getting them from somewhere. There's a shortage. They're selling for market price when you go out. What are they, lobster tails? How come Fauci's not genetically... Why isn't Fauci not genetically arranging these chickens' genes so they grow six wings instead of two?
So we could go maybe to the Wuhan laboratory and take a couple of chickens with us.
That's right.
And we could figure out a way to increase the number of wings on the chickens through artificial means.
Yeah, and you know, the Democrats are all upset with Ron right now, DeSantis, you know, because he wants to get his own... they call it, what, is militia army?
Yeah, in fact, I have a little information on that, if I can find it while you're mentioning that. Indeed, he is proposing a civilian Florida State Guard. And it would not be the first state to do that, you know.
No, there's 29 of them, Paul.
There's about, DeSantis last week, I think Thursday, proposed reestablishing a World War II era civilian military force that he would oversee. He pitched the idea of creating what he calls the Florida State Guard. It would be independent of the federal government. They would consist of 200 volunteer civilians trained in emergency response techniques that would aid in the event of natural disasters and other state emergencies. They could possibly be used to quell some sort of riot or something as well, don't you think?
Well, Paul, I got a restored Sherman tank in storage.
You do?
Getting there ready because I want to go join.
You really do? I'd love to see it. Can we get inside that Sherman tank and march down?
We're taking for a ride.
I love it.
Paul, these people are so ridiculous. Yeah, the American people are really getting fed up. But I still run into Democrats that think he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
And I ask him, doing what? Raising the price of chicken wings?
I know.
That's it.
There's nothing he's done that he can even point to. Other than the failures, he can point...
We have shortages on everything, high gas prices, high food prices, a division in this country like never before. But yeah, he's doing a good job.
There's another poll that's come out again, and he's dropped even lower than he was before. He's going south, not north, with his favorability.
Paul, like I told you, when they say 36%, you know it's 26.
Yeah.
I mean, what about this thing now? He's having meetings with the media, okay? The Biden administration is having meetings with the media so they can change how they're speaking about the economy. They want them to make it sound like it's better.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, have you heard that they want to, they blame the message and the messenger rather than what they're really doing, saying, you know, we just don't, people are not getting how good it is that the things that we're doing, it must be our message.
What are they doing? I want to know.
Well, they're trying to convince you that by spending more money, like trillions of dollars, that somehow it's going to kickstart our economy like never before. All you got to do is take money from everybody and kind of collect it, and then let the government decide how to spend it, and then all of a sudden things are going to get better. That's what they're. That's the snake oil that they are trying to sell you.
Paul, I just don't understand how people believe this crap. And here, oh, we got one case of the moronic virus coming out. The moronic virus is coming out now.
Yes,
I haven't seen nothing. I can't wait to see when his polls really drop below 26. What's going to happen?
Yeah. Well,
okay, the guy's starting World War III to begin with. Look at him with China and Russia. And look at Hu Jinping there, whatever the hell his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to give a diplomatic boycott to the Olympics. Oh, boy. I bet you that scared him, huh?
Yeah, that's another thing, the Olympics. We didn't talk about that today, but that's a good point. We're going to send all of our athletes over there. So exactly what are we doing that's going to intimidate China?
Nothing. And same thing with Russia. But does Biden think he's scaring Putin? I can guarantee you that Putin is going to march over to Ukraine, probably right after the holidays, okay? And then right after that, you're going to see China go after Taiwan. And you know what? Once they do that, you think you have no new cars? Now you haven't seen nothing yet. The next car you buy is going to be a Chinese car.
Wow. I don't want to buy a Chinese car.
And you know what?
I already got a Japanese car. I do.
And you know what, Paul?
What?
I want to see a major snowstorm up north and the people with their electric cars getting caught on the highways with these electric cars and traffic jams. They can't move and they run out of juice and they got no heat. What's going to happen?
Not good. Whatever it is, doesn't sound like it's good that's going to happen. Are you going to wish that on people for Christmas up north?
Paul, you know what? People got to learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to learn is for it to happen.
Yeah, I think people are learning the lesson now when they go to the gas pump. They know that electric cars are still in the future. I mean, you know, a domination of electric cars. And they realize, if they give it a moment's thought, that you still have to have petroleum product to even kickstart the electric car industry. Does anybody not realize?
You need fossil fuels to recharge the electric
exactly
car.
Right. Exactly right.
And yet, you got these poor little kids stripping the earth with slave labor to make their lithium batteries.
This is terrible. I mean, we got fracking. We came up with this concept of fracking, which has renewed the ability of our country to lead the world. You know, to lead the world in the production of petroleum product. And then we've got, and what is it that he allows the pipeline in Russia, but he shuts down the pipelines in the United States? It makes no sense.
Well, I think he's trying to help his son Hunter out. I think they're buying all his paintings.
Oh, that could be.
$1 million a piece. So I think he's trying to help them out. Your one hand washes the other.
So I see. So Hunter's paintings will be hanging in the Russian museums and in the Chinese museums. I never thought of that. Is that where we're going to go to see them?
What I want to know, Paul, is how come they went after Trump for Russian collusion when you got it written all over Biden's face?
I know. You're exactly right. Not only that, he got Hunter played both sides of the border. He did. He was getting money from Ukraine. Remember that with the energy company?
That's right.
He was on the board of directors, but he was also getting money through the wife of the mayor of Moscow.
That's right, $3 million.
So he was playing both sides.
But I understand Joe got a cut out of that.
Well, yeah, we had to get a piece of the action for, quote, the big guy,
as Hunter would say
in his emails that we found. Big guy.
How come there's no investigations going on? If this was Trump, Paul, they'd be investigating him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 30 days a month.
You know, I was wondering if Durham, because he's got a long leash, the, you know, the guy that's doing all of this investigation of the Russian, the Trump-Russian thing. I wonder if his long leash would allow him to kind of step into that area, because everything seems to be connected, you know?
Paul, you know, I don't know. A couple things about Durham, and then they disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what's going to go on with this and how long? I can't wait till Trump's new site's going to start coming up here pretty soon in December, I believe.
Now, that's his new website.
That's his new social media site.
Okay. And that's coming up when?
I believe in December or January sometime.
Okay. Because we're, of course, into December now. But
Yes, maybe later December or January. I don't know.
I see.
But I hear.
Oh, that'll
be. I can't wait for that, because you know what? We're going to find out what's really going on.
Yeah.
I don't understand this media. How they can sit there and spend the propaganda that they're spending. They make Tokyo Rose look like a Peter Pan.
Yes. Hey, speaking of all of that, the CEO of Twitter is stepping down.
Yeah, well, he did that last week, I guess, because his name was on Epstein's list.
Oh, is that why it was?
Those are the rumors I heard. A few people.
Okay.
A bunch of CEOs.
Is that what it was?
On last week.
There are a bunch of them that are kind of, Well, this guy, what's his name, Jack Dorsey? I wondered why he all of a sudden decided he was going to, you know, move away.
He's another guy who needs to be slapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's disgusting how these people are against their own country. Look at the opportunity they had to grow up as the CEO of Twitter, making millions of dollars, and he's condemning the country and capitalism.
Yeah. Oh, this is always the way it is with the ones at the top. The ones that are the biggest, you know, proponents. You know that Putin is a billionaire? All the money he's stolen? And he's a communist.
Of course.
He's a billionaire. In fact, he may be, if you really looked at it, he may be the wealthiest man in the world.
He could be.
You know, he could be. You never know.
He could be. But
anyway.
He is. Didn't he just send some people up in a rocket? So he's charging people going up in rockets, too. He's probably making a good buck there. But, Paul, it's disgusting, everything that's going on. You know, I kind of got a block in my mind right now for the Christmas holiday. I want to think about the Christmas holiday and being born instead of Joe Biden destroying the country Christ built, you know?
Yeah, you're right. We want to think about it. This is the time of year we want to think about peace. We want to think about goodwill. And we don't want to think about Biden. Anyway, it is a pleasure, as always, to talk with you, my friend. Thank you so very much.
That's it, Paul. Swing by after the show.
I will, my friend. I will.
All right, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Bye. All right. Bye. Ah, yes. What a crazy world we live in. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, will a constitutional convention, will that fix what's wrong with our government? Some conservatives believe it could, and we are going to take a look.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
On a Wednesday, a final segment of Freedom Works. We thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. But you can listen to our show anytime you want. Not because we are on all the time. We are not. But because Ed puts all of our shows on podcast. Therefore, if you go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, ourfreedomworks.com, click on the podcast button. You'll see all our shows that we've been doing. And Ed's got them all set up for you. Latest show at the top all the way. You'll see the guests we have that for that show and the top 10. It's great. Ourfreedomworks.com. All right. Did you know that Article 5 of the Constitution allows state legislatures to call a convention to propose new amendments to the Constitution? Why is that? Why is it Article 5 in the Constitution? Because the Founding Fathers realized that there were going to be some things that down the road the people of the country might want to consider putting into our Constitution. So that was it. And so Article 5 allows that. Conservative lawmakers are now mounting a push to call for a constitutional convention. You've got to get three-quarters of the states, three-quarters of the 50, of the, in our case, 50 states, to call for it. If you get that many, they will call the convention. And so conservatives are mounting a push to call for a convention. They want to create a balanced budget amendment. They want to create a balanced budget amendment. In other words, you can only spend the amount you take in and no more. Now, that's been something we've talked about for eons, eons. And so far, we've gotten nowhere with it. Now, it says here at least two-thirds of the states must call for a convention. I thought it was three-quarters. Anyway, if it's two-thirds, we're talking two-thirds of 50, whatever that is. That's about 3 into 50. What is that? Anyway, it's about 34 of the 50 states. So far, 15 states, 15 have passed legislation proposed to call for a convention. So we got a long way to go. Once a sufficient number of states have approved the call, Congress gets to set the rules. Article 5 says any proposed amendment would have to be ratified by here's where the three quarters is. Any proposed amendment from the states have to be ratified by three quarters of the states to take effect. Okay. The three quarters of the states when they vote. So that's how it works. All right. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. Don't hold your breath. In the meantime, Ed, before we get to our top 10, we have a good one. I was watching our beloved Lightning play last night. They were down 2-1.
Mm.
There was only about 2 minutes left. And they came back in that third period. Did you watch any of that?
I did a little bit of it, yeah.
Wasn't that exciting?
Yeah.
And they won up in Montreal.
Yep.
First of all, I didn't realize we can go up to Montreal by plane.
Why not?
I thought that we still had the virus.
The restrictions were basically at the border as far as traveling by car.
Oh, by car?
Yeah, by car.
Okay. So you can fly in and out.
Yes. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, but yes.
Yeah.
But now the border is open, I believe.
Okay. Very good. Very good. All right, my friend. It is time for our top 10. These are supposedly the most profitable James Bond movies. Now, you got to remember, these movies started way back in 1962.
I saw my first one. I snuck into the movie theater. It was Live and Let Die with Roger Moore.
Yeah, snuck okay.
In. I was only about 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. You remember that. All right. So this is not based on the amount of money that it actually brings in, but it's based on a rate of return for the money that they put out to make it.
Gotcha.
Okay, so here we go. Most profitable James Bond movies. Number 10. Timothy Dalton's License to Kill. It was made in 1989. You remember that guy,
yes.
Timothy Dalton?
Mm-hmm.
And the return on a $42 million budget was $156 million. Okay, number 9. One of the Roger Moore Bond movies is number 9, A View to a Kill. Mm-hmm. That was made in 1985. They spent $30 million. It returned $152.6 million. All right. Number 8. Which one did you say you saw?
Live and Let Die.
Oh, okay. Number 8 is on Her Majesty's Secret Service. George Lazenby was Bond. It was the only movie he was Bond in.
Hmm.
They got rid of him after it. But he did well. They only spent $8 million, but they made $82 million on it. All right. Number 7. Roger Moore again. The Man with the Golden Gun. Mm-hmm. Did you see that one?
I remember that, yeah.
1974. $7 million. The return, $97.6 million. Pretty good. All right. Where are we? Number 6. Number 6 is a Sean Connery. Diamonds Are Forever. That was in 1971. It was actually the last Bond movie that he made for Albert Broccoli. He made another one, but it was not with the Albert Broccoli team. All right. Number 5. Actually, it's a tie for number 4.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one is the one you saw, You Only Live Twice.
And no, Live and Let Die.
Oh, You Live and Let Die. I got the wrong live. Okay. Well, number 4 is a tie. One of them is You Only Live Twice. That was a Sean Connery 1967 movie. Mm-hmm. They had Japanese and volcanoes and stuff like that. All right. And the other number 4 is Thunderball.
Hmm.
That was a good one. 1965 Sean Connery. Both of them made $111.6 million. All right, number 3. This might be my favorite Bond movie. From Russia with Love. Did you see it? On TV?
Not the whole thing. I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Great movie. Didn't have all the special effects, but was made in 1963 with Sean Connery. It only cost $2 million to make. Can you imagine $2 million these days to make a Bond movie? But it returned about $78.9 million. That's a good return on $2 million. All right. We come to, let's see, number 2. I'm sorry. Goldfinger.
Mm.
1964, Sean Connery. Many consider it the ultimate James Bond movie. Only $3 million to make. It returned $124.9 million.
Hmm.
All right. All right, Ed, do you want to guess the number 1 most profitable Bond movie?
I don't know, but I'm guessing it's probably going to be the one Sean Connery was in.
It is.
Okay.
The first one.
So my Live and Let Die never made the list.
No, unfortunately.
Well, they got my $5.
Well, I'll tell you what, they all made money. They all did. Number 1 is Dr. No.
Dr. No.
The very first Bond movie with Sean Connery in 1962. They spent $1 million, I mean chicken feed. They got $59.6 million, and the rate of return was higher than any other movie of the Bond era. So there you go. All right. Thank you so very much for being with us. We will be back on Friday. Drive carefully, be good, and remember, freedom works.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News.